the long march, and the man toiling alongside me turned out to be Elvis Presley, who picked up a thing like a balalaika off the muddy trail and began crooning Love Me Tender. Under his peasant rags, he had on a U.S. Army dress uniform. The political officer executed him on the spot, and when I tried to stop it, I was back in the machine for an eye blink, and then in a poolside cocktail party in Los Angeles, talking to Clark Gable, holding a martini instead of a rifle, while the grime and cold of China faded, replaced by California sun. You often did run into famous actors during Wild Year, possibly because you were somewhat aware of playing a part yourself. In normal years, that's suppressed, although you have a hint of it during transitions. The day we left Europa, I took a 10-year marriage contract with Kate Larson, who had done enough time travel to try Wild Year, and although she sort of enjoyed the absurdity of it, she said once was enough. She had a taste for quiet years, and would never have visited 1943 or 1968, for instance, if she had a choice. I sort of liked them, but then I liked every year for different reasons. 5. Memory Tricks. Kate and I got to know each other at Open Studio, which met over in ours every Saturday morning. I went to keep up my drawing skills. There's no subject more challenging than the human body. It's also a socially acceptable excuse for staring at women. We had both worked with paper and ink back on Earth, materials reserved for experts now, and were initially clumsy with the light box. We got together once or twice a week to practice, using each other as models, and one thing led to another. She also lived and worked in Mech, a sanitation engineer, so moving in together was simple. I traded my room with the man living next to her, and we opened the door between them. It took 2 trips with a handcart to move all my things, the 10 kilograms from Earth, plus the clothing I'd chosen and a few racks of data cubes. We moved on Tuesday, which was linen day in Mech, saving a trip. Kate couldn't be the one to move because she was painting a mural on one wall of her room with acrylics she'd brought from Earth. It was a beautiful and intricate semi-abstract, faceless human forms, some of which I recognized from the studio, one of them me, tangled together in a sphere, about 2/3 completed. She also had holos of her parents and 2 matching Chinese scrolls, gold leaf and watercolor. I had a painting my father had done of the cabin in Maine and the cover of Life magazine for August 27, 1945, celebrating VJ Day, the end of World War II. In an unoccupied corner of the room, I leaned my walking stick from childhood, ornate with over 200 years of increasingly delicate carving. Maybe there would be hiking on the new planet. There was no one place aboard Mech where all 200 of us could see outside. The sternward dome might hold 40 people, packed in like weightless sardines, and a like number could look out of each of the 4 windows where the sky rolled by as the ship rotated once each 2 minutes. Kate and I went to the window nearest our place, 90, and looked down at the familiar sight. Jupiter rolled by with its constantly changing crazy quilt clouds, then the cracked ivory billiard ball of Europa, and the welding arc glare of the tiny sun. Io was near, a reddish-brown fingernail crescent. The other 4 ships slid by in their fixed positions, Manus and Mentos a kilometer away, Sanitas and Ars about twice that, 4 points on the Pentagon we would try to maintain all the way up to a 50th the speed of light. There had been an assembly down at the park, an exchange of speeches between our 6 leaders and various officials on Earth, the Moon, and Mars, more or less coordinated on the big screen. The Earth and Moon were on the other side of the Sun, and so had an extra 18-minute delay, as well as a slightly degraded picture from solar interference. "Well, that wasn't too excruciating," Kate said as we stared down. "At least it ended on time." They let us go 10 minutes before launch time, so everybody who wanted to could get to a window. The one at Zero, the park where assemblies were held, was too crowded. I checked the watch tattooed on the inside of my wrist. 2 minutes. We should feel something. Maybe a little bump, I said. 1/100 of a G. She laughed. God, you're more of an engineer than I am. You know, emotion, feel something. I hugged her waist and laughed back. Okay, okay, joke. I'm still getting used to that. A bright little chain of water fairies went by. Never saw all 8 of those together before. Going to call your folks? Once we're underway. I wrote them when I did the mail this morning. I'd talked with my mother for a few hours after midnight. Nothing resembling conversation, of course, with the time lag. She was talking from the balcony of their beach place in California. I watched a spectacular sunset while we reminisced and speculated about the future. She pottered around with plants during the long pauses. I worked on an abstract montage that incorporated the sunset colors and garden greens with the icy black of space. I was getting comfortable with the light box. She approved of the mission, but had no desire to join us. There was no way she could have brought her life along. Most of the week she was out in the field, working to restore the huge Yosemite Park, which had burned out of control at the end of the war and grown back rank and chaotic. Working from old pictures, they were force-growing large trees to match the original ecosystem and landscape. Weekends, she was involved in a drama group working with some incomprehensible 21st-century French plays. I don't know, I said. I guess I feel more impatience than anything else. Get this show on the road. I want to see Jupiter close up, Kate said. But you know, that's the big problem. When do we actually leave? We'd slowly draw away from Europa's grasp, then fall in toward Jupiter for a last gravitational assist before crawling out to the stars. But it wasn't exactly like casting off and watching the land behind you sink beneath the horizon. Leaving L4 was the big separation for me. Before that, you could return to Earth on one of the manned shuttles. Most of them had been robot Dumbos, though only 4 people took advantage of the possibility during the years of loading. In that sense, I think it was leaving Earth, she said. I never saw returning as an option. There, someone on the opposite side of the window said. A pale blue nimbus appeared at the stern of each ship and snapped into focus as a reverse teardrop of flame. Not a novelty, of course, since we had seen it every time we looked outside on the way here from Earth. But it was different. We held each other a little closer for a couple of minutes, and then, without discussing it, headed back to the apartment. To some people, sex was a futile and time-consuming anachronism, with reproduction completely out of the picture. Some even went so far as to be modified so that desire dried up and left their hands free for other things. Kate agreed with me that that was bizarre and unnatural. My friend Alex, who's been sexless for 50 years, argues that everything else about us is unnatural, so why not go all the way? But even he needs love, or at least companionship. He's been married 2 times since he opted out, once to a man who was still sexed. I never asked how they handled that, but they both kept the contract for 10 years. The second day out, we threw a wedding party. Kate and I each drew 2 weeks of alcohol allotment, 4 bottles of wine and 1 of fuel, lime-flavored, and since I was a cook, I was able to concoct a few trays of savories and pastries, and diverted a few bunches of grapes and 10 apples from the kitchen. We held the party in the half-G meeting room that overlooked the orchard, only a little crowded for the 30-some who came. There were the traditional ribald jokes and songs, fueled by the extra alcohol some of the guests brought. Hoarding non-drinkers found themselves invited to a lot of parties. Kate's daughter came, of course. They were one of only 11 parent-child combinations aboard Aspera. There was almost no family resemblance, other than a vague similarity in nose and chin and frame. Kate, like me, had fixed her appearance around age 40. Her daughter Jen was a nubile blonde bombshell, though well over 80. "So people can tell us apart," she said. Her mother thought it went a little deeper than that. Jen had never married and went through men pretty fast. She acted 20 with them, which was probably intriguing at first. I played a few pieces with the string quartet, but people wanted something more lively. Nobody does gavottes anymore. There were enough willing people, 21, to try some matrix dancing. I was content to watch. Kate did it for about 10 minutes, but then signaled for a replacement and gratefully broke from the formation, panting, and put her clothes back on. I loved her mercurial spirit. She didn't dance often or well, but she threw herself into it when the time was right. A case of opposites attracting, perhaps. Nobody would ever call me impulsive. She had a serious side, too, though, and could focus intently on work or study. I began teaching her guitar back at L4, and she would practice on the steel string so hard and long that for weeks it drew blood on the fingertips of her left hand. I offered to loan her my Martin with its easier action, but she said no, the pain wasn't great, and it helped her determination. We slouched arm in arm on the couch for a while, watching the dancers, and then Bruce and Renee joined us with a dangerous-looking pitcher of fuel that was boiling with white fumes. Edison Doyle, the mech coordinator, had brought up a block of dry ice, and the pitcher had a small piece foaming at the bottom. Since fuel is about 80% alcohol, the dry ice cooled it to below the freezing point of water, and so it went down very easily, your throat anesthetized. One sip was plenty for me. Bruce and I have been close for almost a century, since Chimborazo. My main template character in the Time Machine is based on him and his on me. We're both virtuality engineers. We've pulled each other out of trouble in dozens of different places and years. "You saved my butt last week," I told him, "in 1915, Gallipoli. I was an Aussie infantryman." "Sounds rough. I've never been there, though Ypres and Passchendaele were no picnic. I suppose the desert's worse than the forest?" "Bad enough. Too much sun to share with thousands of bodies."
"So how'd I save your butt?"
"Oh, I got blown up by a shell, wounded past caring. You showed up with postcards, and I went on to London. Otherwise, I wouldn't have lasted another minute. Would have been pulled and recalibrated."
"That's always a pain."
London was exciting. The city itself hadn't been attacked, but it was cranking up to a total war footing. There was a big thing about women working on the trams. He nodded. "I did 1916 there once, when the Zeppelins were attacking. It was pretty tense." "I guess that started about a month after I was there."
"The last day in May 1915. He poured himself another glass of fuming fuel, but I declined.
Kate and Renee stood up with a change in music, a quick dance tune. Kate tugged on my arm.
"Would you boys stop talking shop and give us some exercise?"
The festivities went on well past midnight. That room was popular for parties because it wasn't near any residences. Edison Doyle showed that his leadership qualities included an impressive capacity for fuel. I took it pretty easy because I was going to be in the Time Machine all the next day, tracking down reported anachronisms. Kate had a little more than she was accustomed to. She got home without help, but I spent that honeymoon night learning about the variety and volume of snores a small woman can produce. 1918. I shivered with fever, wrapped up in a scratchy woolen blanket in a trolley car that rattled and rocked and bounced. It was autumn, wet leaves on untended lawns, everything gray and chill.
"You're awake," Bruce said. He was dressed in a gray suit, yellow spats and gloves, bowler hat. "It's 1918, North Philadelphia."
"Where is everybody?" My voice quavered and my teeth wanted to chatter.
"Indoors, afraid of the flu," Diane said. Before it runs its course, it will kill 3 times as many as the war." She was standing in the aisle, holding on to a hanging leather strap.